Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach, clinical hypnotist, and master problem solver. I have an incredibly special guest and probably one of the bravest people I've seen. She is young. She is 21 years old. And she has been suffering with an eating disorder. And she's been suffering and had not had treatment for it. And she's going to start treatment. But the reason why this person is so special, besides the fact that she has wisdom beyond her years, is that she wants to do this podcast. She's not a professional in any, she hasn't written books, but she wants the world to understand of the pain, the misunderstanding, the need for support, and everything that goes into an eating disorder. So without further ado, Veronica, welcome.
Thank you.
I know this is hard for you, but explain what an eating disorder is and tell us what yours is particular.
There's a lot of different categories of what can be considered an eating disorder. There's unhealthy eating and restricting and dieting.
And restricting simply means that you're limiting the amount of calories on purpose.
Yes.
Now, why would someone do that?
There's a lot of reasons why someone could do that. For me, I can't speak on other people's behalf, but in my experience, when I was younger, I was very insecure, and I felt, kind of like, I've always had a lot of friends when I was younger, but it was like I wasn't very secure in who I was and didn't have a lot of confidence, and it kind of led to feelings of loneliness and kind of thinking, like, what was wrong with me? And throughout middle school, it got to a point where I looked towards, like, my weight. Like, that was something I could control, and if I lost weight, then maybe people would like me. And mind you, it was, like, never, like, I was always the smallest girl there was in the class. And I think maybe two of my friends were, as small as me, and I don't know where I got that, like, sense of inadequacy with my weight and my body. And I think it was just, growing up and hitting puberty and, yeah.
Was there a part that you wanted to stay a child and it was just hard growing up?
Not that I just, like, I wanted more than anything to take on new, like, responsibilities, and I don't think it was ever, like, wanting to stay a child. But, like, embracing, like, womanhood and all those, like, parts that come with it, like getting curves and, getting
growing
your period.
And
it's just, like, that was so uncomfortable for me. And adjusting to that body and, like, I don't know, it was just, I never felt comfortable in it.
Very well put. Tell us what... how your eating disorder, what does it look like? What do you do?
Well, my eating disorder has, like, changed a lot, and honestly, it...
And when did it start, by the way?
It started when I was 13 years old.
13, okay. What did it look like then? What does it look like now?
At first, it started with dieting. I cut out desserts, and then, I cut out lunchtime, and I wouldn't eat with my friends at lunch, and then it turned into, dinner and breakfast, and it got to the point where freshman year of my high school, I cut out everything, and I was going to school on one cup of Frosted Flakes a day.
And that's what you were eating?
That's what I was eating.
Now, were you heavy at any point in your life, or... Never.
Never.
So you were never heavy, and yet your brain told you that if I could get even thinner, I'm going to get more attention.
It wasn't ever, like, attention. It was never, like, wanting other people's attention. I think it was my own...
coping mechanism?
A coping mechanism and also way to control things. I had a really difficult childhood. And not ever in the sense of, like, problems in my family. I mean, my mother had an eating disorder. So I never had a great example growing up of, like...
What was her eating disorder?
When she was in high school and college, she purged and she was bulimic. And now she is anorexic and... she diets a lot. Like, everything in our house is, like, there's a whole cabinet that's just for her. Like, that's, like, her own, like, low-calorie bread and low everything. Like,
okay, so you had an example that you grew up with, you know, about being thin.
Yeah.
That must have affected you.
Yeah, I think it affected me more than I, you know, like, I know that it affected me. It's just one of those things, like, you don't realize how much it really is affecting you until you look back on it and say, wow, that kind of really did.
It affects you a lot because when you're born, your frontal lobe is not really wired to about 18 to 25. So the mammal brain, it's not very bright. What it's really the source of unhappiness, depression, self-distortion. And that's, in your case, you looked in the mirror and you saw something you didn't particularly like. But were you very visual with the eating disorder or just really connected to the scale? Both.
What do you mean by visual?
Meaning looking in the mirror and saying, I don't look thin enough.
I think at first it wasn't that I don't look thin enough, because I was thin. Right. I think it was more of a sense of inadequacy, and it never was anybody telling me you're fat or you're not good enough or you don't fit in, because I had tons of friends. I was very outgoing. I played tons of sports. I was a great athlete. It was, you know, that sense of you're not good enough, Natasha, that voice inside of me saying, you know, repeatedly, after it says it enough times, you start to believe it. And it was never anyone else telling me that. It was always myself and being down on myself. And it's hard to explain. It's like...
I think you just did. You use the eating disorder as a way of actually killing those feelings or pushing them off.
I think it was a way, like... I just wanted to accept myself. I wanted to be able to love myself, and it turned into, you know, a compulsion and an addiction and such a terrible disease. It, you know, it just came out that way.
It's interesting how in everything that's addictive, at first it feels amazing.
It did.
You know,
it did.
Absolutely amazing that you have your life in control because you're controlling your life. And then you realize that what you're addicted to controls you.
It does control me.
I'm sorry, again.
You know, like freshman year of high school, I was probably about 100 pounds. And I was really active. And, you know, at the time, like, I wasn't eating a lot. I was eating that cup of Frosted Flakes a day. And
I can't believe you did all that energy on Frosted Flakes.
Yeah, I did competitive cheerleading and I did track and
so
it got to a point.
You were burning a billion calories, yeah. and taking in none.
So like when I first started, it was like all my friends were like giving me such great attention, and I was always very light, so I was a flyer on the team, and they were always saying how light I was, and that just encouraged it, and I got a lot of attention from a lot of guys, and so at first, like, I was getting all this positive feedback, and it was like, wow, this is helping me so much. It's doing me so much for me, and, like, by the end of November, you know, I was in a hospital.
When you went to the hospital, how did your parents react? And do you feel the hospital experience helped you in any way?
It did not help me in any way because...
It was a bad experience?
It was such a bad experience because I was not ready to admit that I had an eating disorder. I let the doctors go on for months and months thinking that it was something else or something wrong with my kidneys or why was my potassium low? Why was all my other levels low? Like, they went on a wild goose chase, like, trying to figure out what was wrong with me because I kept denying that I had an eating disorder, downplaying that I had an eating disorder, that it wasn't really bad as it was. So I really wasn't ready to accept treatment. My idea was I'm going to eat and pretend that I'm going to do good so I can, you know, get out of the hospital and then go back to my old ways. Because the longer I stayed in the hospital, the more I would gain weight.
It's interesting that even in the hospital, they couldn't pin out the fact that you were kind of manipulating them.
I was manipulating them, like, you know.
Did your parents know you had an eating disorder, and did they do anything about it?
I think my mom really caught on because she had an eating disorder, and she knew what
to look
out for.
Disorder.
Yeah, she does.
Right.
I mean, like, she won't, like, today, like, it's like a subject that she doesn't talk about, so that's why I say she had.
Okay, great.
It's just
she
like
doesn't
another...
talk about it, so it doesn't, so it disappears.
Yeah. So, I think, yeah, that was... Like, this disorder, like, I genuinely consider myself, I really take pride in honesty, and those are all, you know, traits I want to have, and this disorder has made me manipulative, it's made me deceitful, it's made me a liar, it's made me go behind my family and friends, my loved ones, it's made me, like, not stay true to myself, and it's made me into a monster, and that's just not who I am. There's so many other great qualities about me and that I'm trying to explore more of and trying to reclaim who I am and without this eating disorder. It's been such a long journey.
Now, it's evolved a little bit for you because you don't restrict as much as you binge.
No.
Right. And explain what binging is and what is it and how do you do it?
Binging is when you just have no control over the way you're eating. And I feel like, you know, once I start eating, I can't stop. And restricting turned into binging because it got to a point where, you know, I was so dizzy, I had to eat something. And, you know, restricting leads to binging.
Right.
And
because once you, and this is true, once you cause the body to feel starved, the body is then going to send the signal to the brain, eat everything you can.
Yeah, and that's what I was doing. It got into a pattern where I was eating everything I could, and I couldn't stop because I was so hungry. And then I was purging because I didn't want to gain weight.
Okay, so this was a vicious, vicious cycle. And for most people, it becomes so dangerous because it always starts young. It always starts young. And the acids in your stomach are coming up because you're vomiting all the time. You run the risk of hurting your heart and damaging your esophagus. And
Not only that, it's like when you have an eating disorder, that's the last thing you think of. Like, I know all the consequences. You know, I could tell you thousands of things all about all the different organ systems that my body, what I'm doing to myself. And it's like... You don't think of that. All you think of, you have that direct mindset is, I just want to be skinny. I just want to be accepted. I just want to like myself. And I thought that being skinny was going to make me like myself, was going to make me be able to, you know, tap into, like, all the other good personality traits I have. And that's the biggest lie of all, is that, you know, I'm going through and in restricting and then purging and binging and I keep thinking that, like, I keep having hope that I'm going to be happy sooner or later, and every single time it fails me.
It does, because what happens, addictions, they are liars. They're like, they play your best friend. They play, no one understands you as well as I do. No one could give you the type of relief that I can. And in the end, they consume you. They consume your time. The more the addiction takes hold of your life, the harder it is, Veronica, the harder it is to focus. Don't you find that too much of your life is being taken up by this disorder?
Yes, it really was. Like, it had paid such a toll on my schoolwork. Like, not only was I in the hospital a lot, like, I think...
How many times were you in the hospital?
In the hospital, my high school career, probably 13 times.
Wow.
I have actually been in treatment before, and it was the same thing as every single time I was hospitalized. I just played the game to get along, to get by, to, you know, get out again.
Is it hard for you to make real friends because you have this secret that very few people know about? Now everyone in the world's going to know about it, Veronica.
It really is. It really is, because, like, even with my friends who I did open up to about and was comfortable telling, like, once they knew, like, it was like they wanted to, you know, be there for me and you know, take me out to eat and make sure that I was eating with them. And it just became, like, to the point where I would just ignore their texts, pretend not to be home, lie to them, just to protect my eating disorder.
It's amazing. It's amazing how addiction, eating, it causes you to isolate, because it tells you that it's the only friend you have.
Yeah. Okay. And it did feel that way.
Now, you know intellectually that the eating disorder is dangerous. It has completely fucked up your enjoyment of life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you're still in it.
Yeah.
Explain why it is hard to let something go that you know is going to stand in between your very, very intense goals in life, which you want.
It's just like, you know, I want so badly to be free of this thing and to be able to live my life and not feel like a prisoner to my own eating disorder. And it's just so hard. You know, a lot of people who don't have eating disorders or who can't understand who are listening will probably think, like, you know, just give it up. It's not that hard. Just give it up.
But everyone who hears this who has an eating disorder is going to shake their head. This person understands me. Why doesn't anyone else? Why can't they going to make their parents listen to this? Why can't their parents? And even though you had a mother with an eating disorder, even she doesn't get what's going on in your head. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's like, not only, first of all, you have to want to get better. You have to want to accept the help. That's the first step. Okay, I did that. Now, like, you know, I am getting help, you know, and I've been through treatment. I know what to do. And I'm still I'm really having a hard time.
Letting go.
I'm afraid to let go. And it's become a point where it's like, it's not even like I like it. I hate doing it. I hate binging and purging. I hate restricting. I hate isolating from everyone. I hate this secret life. And I keep doing it. It's like, it just keeps telling me that it's going to make me feel better, or just the comfort in the moment that it gives me.
Do you know that every addiction tells two lies? One is that just do it one more time and just you're going to feel good. And the second lie is that besides it causing you to lie to everyone else, the second lie is that, you know what, I'll let you go, you know, whenever you want to go, you could go.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really let go of you.
That's the thing I think I'm struggling with the most, because I'm going back to school in 7 days, and there is no room for the eating disorder to exist when I'm at school. And, you know, there's not going to be no room to binge and purge, and there's going to be, you know, I'm going to be in school full time, and I want to be able to go out with friends and go get pizza and go to the cafeteria. Like, that's a big social thing. And it's scary because I know that I have to let go of it. And there's just so many fears going into this, like, coming week. Just the past 2 weeks, it's just been, like, the mindset of the eating disorder. There's just been so much pressure to just, you know.
Do you find it ironic or funny that the eating disorder makes you lie to everyone else, and yet it's lying to you and you're not picking up on it?
Well, I'm picking up on it. I know it's lying straight to me, and it's like, it's hard to understand. It's hard to understand how it is to, I don't know.
how it is the connery between.
I feel like, I don't know, people are going to think I'm stupid for not being able to accept help and.
Anyone who knows anything about an eating disorder is going to realize that every addiction is a struggle, because at one point it becomes a habit, and if it was a person in this room, would you give it a hug or shoot it in the head?
I would give them the biggest hug. I would never let them go.
Okay, so their eating disorder is, in some way, as we just embodied it, is there's kind of a little bit of a love affair with it.
I guess you could say that. I guess it could be a very unhealthy relationship.
Like a bad boyfriend who beats you up and says it won't happen again, right?
Yeah, I actually read a really good book by Jenny Schaefer. Her book is awesome. Just going to put that out there.
Okay.
Life Without Ed. That book is so helpful. Very inspiring. Her story. She talks about how she did it, how she got better from a reading disorder. I'm taking that with me to school.
Excellent. And what is your attempt going to be to get rid of this eating disorder? Because you just gave it a hug.
I don't know. I just like building myself up, making myself strong, and finding out who I really am, learning to love myself, because I feel like throughout this process, that's been the key that I was missing, you know?
I think you
can't learn to respect yourself if you don't have that respect for yourself.
I think the first mistake that most people make is seeing a person with an eating disorder as not having brilliant parts of their personality and their talent. And the fact that you have your own DNA also means you have your own destiny, mm-hmm. and your own dream. We talked about it. You're going to be a doctor, and you're going to be a healer.
I hope.
Absolutely. And you're going to be a great one.
If I get rid of this eating disorder.
When I get rid of this eating disorder.
When I get rid of this eating disorder. Because I will. Hopefully.
What advice did this girl write in her book that you're going to try to take?
She talks about how free she became.
So if in your brain, because
she also talked about like creating your own voice and identifying it as something other than who you are, because I am not my eating disorder, and there are so many other wonderful things that I can, you know, have acknowledged and have learned about me, and that really shine, and the eating disorder takes those things away.
I completely agree.
And learning to say, that is not who I am. This is me. There is another identity, and I don't know.
you're right on target. This is me. This is who I choose to become. And your eating disorder is like being in a bad marriage. Mm-hmm. You stay in it because you get used to it. And then there's kids, and the kids really represent the routine. It represents the routine of the eating disorder.
Or even like an abusive relationship.
Absolutely.
Like you're afraid to leave. You're afraid to leave that person. Like, that's what it's like to have an eating disorder. If that's the best comparison I can give.
That is the best comparison. It's a great one. Because this eating disorder, like a boyfriend who always beats you, looks you in the eye and says, who loves you more than me?
Yeah.
Okay? And that's what the eating disorder says. Who's going to take care of you? How are you going to cope? What are you going to do with all your anxiety, with all your insecurities?
Without me, you're nothing. Without me, you're worthless.
We seem to know how this eating disorder talks.
All too well. I mean...
Have you ever told the eating disorder, you know what? I just realized, you know, you're destroying my life, so go fuck yourself.
That's like one of the biggest points in that book I was talking about, is learning to stand up to your eating disorder, creating your own voice, and saying no.
Right, because your eating disorder is a bully. It's been bullying you now for, you know, since you were a child.
Yeah.
Okay? And you made the bully your best friend.
I did.
It's time to punch the bully in the face.
Yeah.
And the way you punch the bully in the face is you become your own person. You don't become the eating disorder's idea of who you are.
I just need to strengthen who I am and my values. And I think that's what's really going to help me in this healing process is doing that and creating my own voice and learning to say no. Not in this moment.
And I also...
learning to love myself.
I also believe that the more support you could get, the better off that you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some people you don't tell because they can't handle it and because you don't want them to know you in that light.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a person with a drinking problem. They don't tell everyone in their world that they're a drunk, but they do something about it. They find a support system.
Yeah. I'm very ashamed of it. I guess everyone knows now, but I mean, it's just something that you're so ashamed of and you want no one to know about. And secret's out. Like, this has been a huge part of my healing process is letting it go and talking about it.
I think that is a huge part of the healing process is talking about it and then actually, as you're walking hand in hand with the eating disorder, you drop his hand, you slap him in the face and say, you know what? Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're scared to do that.
Yes, we
because
are.
Because we're scared to be without the abuser that we know, but it brings a false sense of safety. What alternatives can you imagine that you could substitute with that, from that, getting rid of the eating disorder and substitute it with what?
I think that's a big part of it is substituting it with something that makes you feel good or something
Veronica,
that
you're an athlete,
gives the same.
You're a student. You're social. You're friendly. You know, you're going to make a million friends, both women and men. You will be able to substitute it with so much because you're so bright.
Thanks. It's so hard to, like, take that in and believe it. But I'm starting to learn. Well, you're teaching me.
keep on playing the tape, okay?
Yes.
Because there's a million. You have the choice. Not everyone. Everyone is not created equal. Everyone is created valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not equal. There's some people who have more talent and more innate skills. You're one of those people.
Thank you.
You know, so we're not going to let a bully completely dominate your life and take away from the wonderful multiple skills that you have and you want to develop. You always want to be an athlete. Mm-hmm. You will get into the right school and the right program, and it's easy for you to make friends. Mm-hmm. Now, the hardest thing for you right now is getting past the fear of saying goodbye to it.
Yeah. Punching it in the face, right?
You have to deal with the fact that there's a love-hate relationship going on here.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Because when I feel like anxiety or stress or sometimes just being bored or not knowing what to do with myself, like restlessness, that's when I turn to it, like in those dark moments, like finding something else to replace the eating disorder.
I think that is a point we should put a lot of exclamations on, is in life you can't give something up without replacing something. Mm-hmm. You can't create a vacuum. So you're going to think about all the many different things that you're going to replace it with. Okay, because you cannot again eat half a bowl of Rice Krispies.
No.
Okay, and function, okay, because you're older, and you need more brain power, you know, to go through the type of education you're going through. So finding another lover in your brain that will not in the end destroy you. Did you start that search of asking what else could I get replace this with?
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult because there's so many other things like I love to do. But
tell me some of those things.
Well, I'm a big outdoorsy person.
Okay.
So
hiking, canoeing?
Yeah, no. Not even that stuff. Like, I have a dirt bike. And
wow.
I have, like, three ATVs
at
home.
Motorcycle chick here, okay? There you go.
And you wouldn't, like, expect it at all because, like, here I am, like, looking like the sweetest, like, girl. And, I mean...
And she is incredibly sweet and pretty and fun. And you have a motorcycle and three ATVs?
Yeah. Golf carts, snowmobiles, you name it. We have it at our house. We have a lot of property where I live, so I'm outside a lot, helping around the house. I like to design stuff and paint. I just painted my bathroom, my sister's bathroom. And so I'm always doing, like, little fun projects and... I love, writing, I love sewing, I love knitting, I love, you know, just being with friends and talking. I love to talk, I love to, relate to other people, and, I like to shop, and like to exercise, though sometimes that gets me in trouble.
Well, it gets you in trouble because, again,
if
you're not eating properly, okay, then you're going to do everything in extremes.
Yeah.
You know, binging, extreme. Give our audience an idea of how much, if you're at a bad binge, you could eat at one time.
I just eat all day.
And what's your height and weight?
I'm 5'2". Oh, right now?
Right now.
Right now, I'm only 97 pounds.
So doing all this activity at 97 pounds, you're right, it's going to be really hard. Now, the eating disorder would say, pick me.
And in the moment, like, even though I have all these wonderful things that I can talk about and all these things I'm so passionate about, in the moment, it just seems to win. Like, everything else feels like it doesn't exist, and I feel like it's my only friend.
Now, that's why we are going to build you an amazing support system, and you're going to find out that it's not only your only real friend, but it's never been your friend. it's been your escape from anxiety and from uncomfortable feelings like boredom. Mm-hmm. Just the way someone with a drinking problem, that's when they drink.
Yeah.
Someone, you know, with a oxycodone problem, that's when they do the oxycodone. Or the whatever drug that they're addicted to. You know, and each time, why do people take drugs? Because they make you feel good. You know, we have to be honest. The world and the community needs to be honest. You're not going to ever eliminate the truth that doing the wrong thing feels good, but it will always catch up with you and cause you to fall apart, and then it won't make you feel good anymore.
I mean, it really, like, has, like, especially in my relationships with my immediate family, my mom, my siblings, my dad, like, it has put my family just, I don't even know how to explain, like, suffer. I've been the cause, well, my eating disorder, because I'm not my eating disorder.
You are not your eating disorder. Say that once more time and a little louder.
I am not my eating disorder.
You're right. Exactly.
My eating disorder has been the source of so much suffering and pain and, you know, me and my mom, we don't really talk. We don't get along. She just, you know, she just sees my eating disorder. That's all she sees.
Probably because she can't see her eating disorder.
Yeah.
How about your dad?
My dad, he's crazy. He's so outgoing and he's just like me. Like, he's just full of life and he's so adventurous and we do everything together, but it really put a strain on our relationship because he couldn't understand what his little girl was going through, and he's not around enough to really see how much it affects me and how it manifests, like, in my day-to-day life. And my mom is the one who really has to deal with me, and she sees that all the time, and she's just got to a point where she can't understand it. She doesn't want to support it. But at the same time that she can't understand or support the eating disorder, like, she denies me of that too. Like, it's not just the eating disorder. There's me too.
Well, it's interesting because as you just shouted into the mic, I'm not my eating disorder, it seems like that's what the people close to you, that's all they see.
They don't know. They just look at me and I can just see it in their faces. Like, it's not just disappointment. It's just like disgust and anger and like I'm going away again, and they've said, like, when they were angry at me or just that they were so happy I was leaving because everything could go back to normal at home and everyone, it would be peaceful again at home and there wouldn't be fighting.
How did that make you feel?
It made me cry. I mean, not in the moment. I yelled some mean things back at them. But it hurts to not feel wanted at home. The eating disorder not wanted, but also in a way, like, they don't know how to separate the eating disorder from me.
They obviously don't know how. Meaning, and when there's an addiction, the whole family needs treatment because they don't know how to separate it from you. They don't know how to deal with the Veronica that has amazing skill sets in so many different areas and amazing interests.
And at home, they don't see that side of me. I mean, when I'm at work, when I'm at school, when I'm in clinicals, like, that's the side of me that comes out. But when I'm at home, that's where the eating disorder lives. That's like the eating disorder. I don't know how to explain it, but it's just so that's Ed's time.
In school, when
Ed eating disorder.
When someone comes to you, because you probably make a billion friends because you're so friendly.
I know.
And they confide in you that they have an eating disorder, what advice will you give them?
To get help right away. To
excellent. Keep going, girl.
I would take them there. I mean, if it was someone doing that to me, I would probably kick and scream and cry. But I think that's what you ultimately have to do, because the longer you let the eating disorder manifest and take control over your life, and then all of a sudden it's been more than a couple months, like, it gets harder and harder to get treatment.
Now, that sounds like your rational brain talking.
Yeah.
Your rational brain is the one that's going to get you through. And
I feel like
healed.
Such a hypocrite here. I'm telling you to go
you're
get
not
treatment.
A hypocrite,
but
because there's a difference between what the rational brain wants and what the emotional brain wants. You're not a hypocrite.
I feel like it's to a point where it's like too far gone. Like, it's like,
that's who's talking now?
The eating disorder.
Exactly.
But it's like,
it's not Veronica.
It gets harder and harder.
But I want you to notice when you open your mouth and say something, from which side of the brain it's coming from.
Yeah.
Is it the rational? Is the side the one that wants you to be successful in every area of the life? Or is it the mammal brain, the one you're born with? The one that their emotions are so painful that they choose something self-destructive to calm the pain. You really have to have that talk with both of you.
Yeah.
Because you have a voice.
Yeah,
you
I do.
You have to choose that right voice. Breaking up is hard to do, right?
It is hard to do.
Now, imagine you're got this amazing boyfriend who really gets you and loves you and vice versa. And you surprise him because, you know, he went on vacation in the ski veil. So you buy a ticket and you go. And
sounds right up my alley.
Okay. And you get the card, you know, to surprise him. And you open up and he's in bed with another woman. Do you still love him as much as you did? Do you just say it's okay, it won't happen again?
Well, my rational mind would say this guy is a jerk.
And
you know,
done.
But, you know, that emotional side of me, that insecure side, would really feel like, oh, this is a misunderstanding. It would be manipulated by him.
Correct. So your eating disorder has always manipulated you.
Yeah.
It's still manipulating you.
Yeah.
And the rational Veronica is going to have to deal with the irrational Veronica. You've definitely started. You're definitely in the right track. You have built a lot of healthy things that you've accomplished. This is going to be the hardest and yet the most rewarding thing in your life, because right now you're a slave and you don't want to be a slave to anyone. Don't you want to be your own person? Veronica, multifaceted Veronica, but not have something in your life that you have to lie and hide and slowly kill yourself.
It's just so much weight, like weighing me down constantly. Like, when you get up in the morning, it's like, oh, when are you going to eat this, this, and this, and how many calories are you going to eat, and when's these meals going to be, and like, when you go on vacation, like, when is there going to be food, or are we going to have to get fast food? Oh no, I don't want to go to McDonald's. All the family wants to go to McDonald's. Like, thoughts running through your head 1,000 miles an hour constantly. It's impossible to focus on anything else in your life.
Exactly. And that's exactly what it does. It takes up more and more space.
Like, I just wish, like, I haven't, like, actually sat down and actually been able, like, to normally, like, you know, enjoy food. I want to be able to enjoy it. I don't want to be able it to be such a source of, like, pain and, like, so much anxiety. And that's not the way it should be.
Absolutely. You know what? The rational you is gaining more strength. Okay? The irrational you, yes, there's some slaying to do. And there's some emotions to go through.
Yeah.
But on the other end, it really is a very bright sky. You know, and you already, even with your disorder,
I feel like I'm never going to be ready to give it up.
You're not going to be ready to give it up. You're just going to give it up because, again, at one point you recognize that this friend is not your friend. So my motto is always change your thinking, change your life. We're going to change that brain of yours so it stops lying to you.
Yep.
How does that sound?
Yeah. Get all the badness out.
Let's say get all the lying and self-destructive thinking.
Yeah.
The mammal brain is completely self-centered, and it's like, unfortunately, I live in the Upper East Side and of New York. So many the young people, as well as their parents, have severe eating disorder, bulimia, anorexia, purging, binging. It's the numbers are staggering. And it's all because of the belief that somehow they do look better or feel better. But really, it's exactly what you said. It's the way the drug they chose to deal with their anxiety.
Yep. Okay. And I mean, that's another, like, I could talk all day to you about all these different things about an eating disorder. We're just not going to have enough time. Like, the way I grew up with social media and just all the different messages I was given about being thin and body image and
Veronica, you are going to not only win, but you're going to fall out of love with a very horrible person who's smiling at you while they're slowly killing you.
Yes.
And you're going to be an inspiration. Now, we talked about this before we started the show. Anyone who wants to reach Veronica could actually email her. And her email address, Veronica, spell it for everyone.
It's veronicapetrovsky@gmail.com. And the last name is P-E-T. R-O-V-S-K-Y.
Veronica.
VeronicaPetrovsky@gmail.com.
Your genuine voice is going to be invaluable, helping others take that step as well.
Yeah, I really hope I can offer some insight to people who don't have an eating disorder, do have an eating disorder.
You're an amazing person, and you know what? Sometimes by helping others, you help yourself.
Yeah, that was the goal.
Thanks for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You were amazing, actually.
Thank you.
Veronica is literally one of the clearest and clear in her mind as to the dynamic of this disorder. She is an amazing person. I hope everyone does email her and some get to know her because she's great, and she is going to be a healer. I want you to take advantage of the fact that you could actually reach out and be in touch with someone who is as genuine and as understanding as you will ever find. I am Dr. Errol Gluck. You could reach me at glucksolutions.com. If you have or suffering from an eating disorder, you could call my office at 212-599-3195. Go and listen to this radio program again. And check out our others because there's a lot of great things there for a lot of interesting different types of struggles and people. And I want to end this saying that you are not what is holding you back, and you're never to be defined by your weakness. There's no word for face in Hebrew. It's faces. We have a multiple. We have a complex brain. And we could have a tremendous amount of skills. Don't allow yourself to focus on the things that bring you down or destroy your life. Remember Veronica's words that the thing that she wishes the most, that she would have got help as early as possible. Whatever you're suffering from, get help as quick as you can. I look forward to you could mail any email, any questions, you know, to me through going to errolgluck@gmail.com, errolgluck, and I look forward to talking to you next week. Until next time.